turn the floor over to Mr. Fernando Musa. Good afternoon, everyone. And welcome. It is a pleasure to be here. As Francisco mentioned, it's a partnership that has lasted for 20 years with APIMECI. So I'd like to welcome not only you, gentlemen and ladies present here, but also those following us up on via webcast. We'll be showing a presentation which will cover topics relative to the businesses, and we'll break it down by geography, Brazil, U.S., Europe, and Europe, then a broad overview of third quarter results, and then we'll touch upon two important topics for our business, which have shown important developments recently. Compliance and circular economy, both very important topics for the industry as a whole, and specifically for Braskem. We were happy to learn last week that we are in a good position in those topics, and we wrap up with an outlook for the industry going forward, and then a Q&A session. After that, my colleagues will share the presentation with me, and we'll start with Marcelo Cerqueira, who will talk about the chemicals unit here in Brazil. Our raw material basis. We apologize, we're not getting sound here at the translation booth. 70% of the volume is allocated externally, 30% domestically. In our chemicals portfolio, we have about 40 products. We only show a few of them here on the slide, the most relevant. Ethylene, which is used for the production of polyethylene and polyesterane. Butadiene, used for the production of synthetic rubber, and also used in the household appliances industry. Propylene, for the production of propylene. Acrylic acid, which will also be used for other products, and also propene oxide. Also, polyurethane for the production of foam, benzene, used for nylon, and also used for detergents, and also for the production for polyesterine, along with ethane, which is another product which is quite important in our portfolio, on top of another important range of products. In other words, it's a very diversified portfolio. In other words, we supply different production chains in Brazil. On the next slide, we have our average utilization rate for the third quarter 2018. We had very good results. We reached 95% of utilization rate after two quarters. In other words, the first quarter 2018, where we had a scheduled shutdown starting in Rio Grande do Sul, and then we had an event in Alagoas, which led to a drop in production for a certain period in the northeastern part of Brazil. In the second quarter of this year, the impact came from a scheduled shutdown in Rio Grande do Sul and also because of the truck drivers' strike. But in the third quarter, we resumed good levels of production and we see already a difference in our numbers. In other words, production is at a normal level now. So year on year, we are slightly below a year to date when compared to last year. On the bottom part of the chart, we see our production volume, which follows the utilization rate. In other words, we saw a growth both abroad and domestically because of product availability. In the year to date numbers, volumes are very much in line, slightly above internally, showing the good level of health and the high level of consumption here in Brazil. And we have reduced exports, of course, because of lower availability of products. In terms of spreads, when we compare this quarter with the previous quarters, we see results coming from the spreads from propene and butadiene, a very strong demand coming from Asia for those products. which are used for domestic appliances. So that affected our chemicals spread. And we see numbers going up throughout the quarters. When we compare year on year, you see the effect of the first quarter in 2017, where we saw a strong increase in the prices of butadiene, especially in Asia. That did not occur now in the first quarter of 2018. We continue to work closely with our clients to create value. We are able to create portfolios with great growth opportunities. I have two examples here on the next slide for hydrocarbon resins. One of its applications is an adhesive product. So clients who produce diapers now have an application to improve the sealing facility of diapers. So that's a very high added value product. We have been introducing that type of products in trade fairs in Europe with very good results. The other product, which is also part of our portfolio, is less well known. It's DIB, which we have developed to replace castor oil. The idea is to provide stability to master bath. So it is a very versatile product used throughout a very wide range of applications as lubricants, adhesives, packaging, aggregates. So it reaches a very important segment in the industry and also adds important value to our portfolio. Along the value creation line, we are going to talk about our project for flexibility of raw materials. It started in November last year, and the idea was to provide more flexibility to the Bahia cracker. Throughout the year, we consumed 30% of the polyethylene ethane, showing that really we are making the most of the project, and it is giving back what we expected in terms of returns. In other words, to use ethane as a more competitive raw material when compared to naphtha. In the bottom chart, we have an oil and natural gas production in Brazil, and there is an expectation of growth in production for gas and oil in Brazil, especially because of the pre-salt project. And the gas coming from the pre-salt levels, it is rich in the raw materials we use for our crackers. So again, the outlook is very good in terms of opportunities for the chemical industry for the coming 10 years. That availability might increase twofold in the next 10 years. I'll give the floor now back to Mr. Santana for him to follow up with the presentation.
Good afternoon to everyone. Now I'll be talking about our resin business here in Brazil. PEPP, vinyl, including PVC and also caustic soda. Our production capacity, if you look to the left, in polyethylene, 3,055,000 tons a year. Polypropylene, 1,850,000 tons. All these capacities are greater than the demand in the Brazilian market today, which allow us to cater to the demands of our Brazilian customers and also have a strategy for target markets, especially in South America, and to complement with the assets we have in Europe and US and Mexico with the portfolio that we have from Brazil. Our sales come basically two-thirds in domestic market, one-third exports. And for PEPP and PVC sales, the food industry is the main destination, accounting for 23% of our sales. And then the manufacturing industry, 13%. Civil construction is very relevant for PVC, with 11% of our sales. and then you can see that there is a very wide range, a broad variety of products. When we start talking about polyethylene, 60% of the applications of PE are destined for the packaging industry. So flexible and rigid packaging, primary and secondary bags. So this is an industry that has a very fast response to improvements in economy on the whole. So whenever consumption goes up, packaging consumption goes up. Every industry uses packaging and bags, so it has a high potential of leveraging the production of polyethylene whenever there is an economic, the economy picks up. And then for PP, there's also packaging, but when we talk about polyethylene, we more really, we have a significant share in more long-lasting goods or products, such as home appliances and automobiles. For PVC, then, this is very much related to civil construction and engineering. So in the last quarter, we already saw that there was a higher confidence. It's an industry that will recover as the economy picks up, and soda, a product that is part of the vinylic chain together with PVC, so 100% of our sales are meant to the domestic market. Now, when we look on the next slide, slide number 11, you can see the evolution of demand of resins in the Brazilian market. And then you can see a long quarter. Q3 is traditionally, because of the seasonality, it's the quarter with the highest demand in the year, with a growth that is slightly above the average of the second half of the year, because we had the truck driver strike, which really affected the results or our the performance in May and June. But we have already overcome this problem year to date. For the first 9 years, the growth is 3%, which is more or less in line with what we expect, the growth of the GDP, which is between 1% and 1.5%. In terms of market share, the evolution of Braskem's market share is relatively stable, kind of flat along this year. We are around 67% of market share. Last year, in the same period, our market share was 69%. We already knew, and even though there are 3 percentage points less, we know that as capacity increases for the production of polyethylene in other regions, we know that there would be an increase in exports being sent to the Brazilian market. But even so, we see that Braskem sales have grown 3% in this period. In terms of sales volume that you see in the lower part of the slide, you can see sales in the domestic market. They have grown 1% if we compare 18 to 17, and exports in 9 months about 1 million tons. As Marcelo said, as we had a level of activity of production that was slightly lower in the first half of the year because of operational issues, the reduction of production in May because of logistic constraints. So year-to-date numbers is 4% lower than the same period last year. Combining here both sales to the domestic market and exports. Now, talking about profitability and the spreads that Marcelo mentioned. So here we have the spreads, and basically we measure the difference between the international reference price for our products minus the international reference price for our raw materials, which is more or less gives us an indication of the evolution of the profitability of our products. Considering the polyethylene market in the U.S. With higher supply because shale gas in operation late in 2017 and in the early 2018, we have seen along quarters this year, if we look at the evolution at the first chart on the left-hand side, we see the evolution of spreads along the year from 736 in the first quarter to $537 in Q3. And this is a natural movement, and it's related to the cycles in our industry. If you monitor, if you follow up market indicators, you saw that along Q4, these numbers are now getting better. In vinyls, on the other hand, or vinyls, the spreads here, we consider both PVC and soda, caustic soda. So there was a drop in the price of caustic soda because of lower demand. But even so, as we had better spread for PVC, we kept our year-to-date spreads at about 2%. If on one hand we have a flat market share, as I said in the previous slide, this is very much because Braskem has significant market share in Brazil. We try to improve the quality of our market share in terms of qualification of our products, innovation, and launch of new products, which make us get closer to the customers and brand owners, the customers of our customers. And in this manner, we are able to increase or to have a closer relationship with these customers and make them loyal. So I would like to highlight here the launch of Braskem Avance, which is an EVA, special EVA line focused on high performance, especially for applications such as the footwear industry. On the right-hand side, we have some important partners that we have that are using this family of products that we launched this year. And more recently, at the end of the second quarter, with a commercial launch, in the third quarter, we launched the green EVA, similar to the green polyethylene, based on sugarcane ethanol, and then with an important appeal in terms of sustainability. The first partnership of Braskem Avance Green is a green line, is Allbirds, an American company that is very popular now, especially in comfortable shoes, which is a type of shoes that have been growing fast and have just won an award last week, precisely because they launched a line of products using our raw material. Another important launch are the PVC windows. So the evolution of the use of PVC in window frames is consolidating. They have been doing it for a long time. So we wanted to have a lighter profile that will be more affordable and therefore expand the use of PVC profiles in the construction market. Talking about results, Brazil's EBITDA accounts for 60% of the consolidated EBITDA of Braskem, and what we saw in the third quarter was a growth of 13% as compared to the second quarter this year. There was also a growth as compared to the first quarter, very much because of the recovery of sales volume that we have had as compared to the second quarter. And this offsets the reduction of spreads in of resins. But we also saw when Marcelo was talking that we attained that also in chemicals spreads. If we look year-to-date numbers, first 9 months of the year in the Brazilian operation, we are 27% below as compared to the same period last year, especially because if we compare the 2 9 months, on average we had lower spreads and a production volume that was slightly lower, reflecting what Marcelo said, because of the incident in our plant in Maceió, because the plant of chlorine soda, and in the northeast. So then further on, other events ended up compensating and making up for the problems we had in production. And last, and summarizing our operations in the Brazilian market, I think that the main thing, Braskem has 29 manufacturing plants and is the only integrated petrochemical industry with first and second generation. We do naphtha, propene, and ethanol, and then we produce all chemical products and resins, including in the vinyl chain. And we have a relevant market share, so a consolidated market share of 67% in the first 9 months of the 2018. And we have partnerships with our customers for innovation and development of customized products, focusing on specific needs. We also believe that we have a differentiated relationship with our customers. In this manner, we can have prices that follow the quality of international markets, both here in Brazil as well as in other countries that are strategic for our exports, such as, for example, Mercosur. Our exports are optimized by our commercial presence outside Brazil. So the fact that we manufacture polypropylene in Europe with having local production, and that facilitates and adds values to our exports of polypropylene manufactured in Brazil that is exported to Europe. And the same applies to Mexico and the United States. And our scale and export make it possible for us that whenever necessary to export whatever is not taken up by the demand in Brazil. And as Marcelo said, our feedstock diversification is something that we bet as a strategy, and we've been consolidating this diversification. So with naphtha accounting for slightly more than 82% of our raw materials, and then ethane, propane, refinery of gas, propylene and ethanol accounting for another 15% for products with renewable raw materials. It's also important to highlight, and many times at first you would think that first, we also have a diversified base of naphtha suppliers. Petrobras today accounts for 43% of our naphtha. 57% of the naphtha that we buy is imported from more than 20 suppliers, international suppliers. So the international naphtha market is very liquid. So now I'm going to turn it over to Fernando to talk about the U.S. and Mexico, rather Europe.
Thank you, Oli, talking about both geographies, U.S. and Europe. Starting with the U.S. and Europe, It's a basically PP operation with 1.5 million tons production capacity in the U.S. and 625,000 in Europe. Its stock base is protein bought from several suppliers in the market. We also have a very important contract with the U.S. for propane supply. We buy it from a plant which processes gas and propane, turning it into propene. It's a long-term contract with an economic rationale linked to the price of propane. It also adds a competitive edge to us. In terms of demand, seasonally, both markets. The second quarter is usually stronger. We have summer vacation right after that, so several clients build up inventories in the second quarter. And then we see a drop of 5% in the third quarter when compared to the second quarter, which is quite common. The year to date, we have some stability of sales when we add together both regions. This is a year where expectations tend to stabilize both for Europe and for the U.S. The auto market had been growing strongly, but this year we see those sales becoming flatter, leading to a more stabilized market. As for the utilization rate on the same chart, operations have improved. We saw an improvement in the third quarter, reaching 87% when compared to 84% in the second quarter. But when compared to our historical levels, those utilization rate levels are lower. We have been facing some operating problems in some plants in the U.S. We had a very long shutdown in one of the plants, which lasted for more days than we expected. That was an impact. And in Europe, the challenges faced by the petrochemical industry because of the low level of the Rhine River has impacted the availability of feedstock, especially for the plant in Vesten, which is located by the river. And that has impacted our production capacity, which impacted or affected that comparison year-to-date between quarters. And when we compare also U.S. and Europe, we see a drop from 97% down to 87%. And then our teams have been working to overcome those challenges. And in the U.S., the expectations are that we'll resume historical levels in the coming months. In Europe, that river issue has been a big challenge, and we do not have, as of yet, a clear picture of what's happening in the near future going forward. So with that, the challenge to access feedstock will remain not only for us, but for most producers located by the river. From the sales standpoint, we saw a drop of 4% in year-to-date sales, in part due to a reduction in demand, in part due to production challenges, which led the accumulated number, the year-to-date 9 months, to show a drop of around 7%, both in the U.S. and in Europe. Now, looking at the spreads on the next slide, the scenario is quite different between U.S. and Europe. In the U.S., we see an increase in spreads, which is a consistent increase quarter on quarter due to a relatively good demand, less robust than expected, but still at a good level, and a good offer of propene, which has granted us a good level of competitiveness, especially with our propane-based contracts. In Europe, the situation is quite different. We see a consistent decline quarter on quarter, leading to a difference in year to date. We see the US to 14% plus, and in Europe we see a drop of 22% as shown by both charts when we talk about year to date spread. The important message there is that despite the drop, we still have a very good level of profitability in Europe. As we combine those factors, spreads and volumes, results continue or remain strong when we look at the combined operations, leading to a number of $182 million in the third quarter, 7% up from the previous quarter. And in the year-to-date numbers, we see a growth which is quite robust at 12% due to an increase or improvement in the operations profitability levels, especially in the U.S. As for value creation, on the next slide, we highlight two different projects, the most important of which is the construction of the new PP plant in the U.S. It is a project of $675 million for a new plant, world-class plant, the largest plant in America with a capacity of 450,000 tons with a startup scheduled for 2020. We already have $341 million invested. The engineering phase is practically over. The procurement phase for equipment and raw materials is well advanced. And it's only normal to be at this phase. We still need to procure some materials, and they are acquired now at this phase. And in terms of construction, we are at about a quarter of the project finalized. There is a picture of the project in the bottom of the slide. You see both reactors and the gas vase already installed as well. It's difficult to tell the picture by the picture, but it's very, very high. It's one of the tallest towers in the region. When you look around the other plants, you don't see anything like it. On the right-hand side, we talk about product development. The market for PP, when used in refrigerated environments, always presented a challenge of combining both chemical and physical properties of the product. Some plastic materials are able to deliver this resistance to colder temperatures. In other words, they maintain the transparency level. We have launched this year a resin for that market of refrigerated products. And we see a picture there. On the right-hand side, you see the traditional product, which is opaque, and with the new resin 6810, which has the same characteristics of the product on the right, but it also ensures a very good transparency level, which is quite important for some segments, such as ice cream, for example, and other frozen products. Customers like to visualize the product inside the packaging. So that was a very important launch in terms of creating value, and that was done in partnership with some of our clients. So in summary, on the next slide, for our operations in the U.S. and Europe, we are today the largest PP producer in the U.S., 5 operating plants in 5 different sites, 1 under construction. We have 2 PP plants in Germany. We have 1 product line which is specialized in PP, the one called UTech, which is a specialty application for high added value applications. We have built a plant in Texas, started last year as a complement to one of our plants in Bahia, which also produces the same kind of product. We have leveraged our international presence as of late, our presence in the U.S., our presence in Europe, in Mexico. All of that together has allowed us to have a much stronger commercial operation all around, not only around locally produced PET products, but also in selling products coming from Brazil, from Mexico, And with the startup of the new plant in the U.S. in 2020, we'll also be able to sell PP coming from the U.S. That gives us an ability to get closer to our clients, which is way ahead of the pack, way ahead of our current position. And in terms of feedstock, as I mentioned, we buy also ethane to produce products which use both PP and ethylene, but we have a very diversified supplier base, both in the U.S. and Europe. Diversified not only in terms of supplies, but in contracting modes, pricing, which allows us to be very flexible when we negotiate those products. As for Mexico, on the next slide, our
started commissioning in late 2015. And we could do everything related to the cracker central with all polyethylene in the first half of 2016. Today, our production capacity is 1,050,000 in both high and low density polyethylene in Mexico. It's a very competitive plant. It was the first plant in the new wave mentioned by Edson in the polyethylene projects built in America, which has the benefit of shale gas because it's indexed to the U.S. prices. Operation rates this year have been suffering with operational challenges that we are dealing with. This is public information that to supply part of our deficiency has started importing ethane coming from the U.S. with a logistic operation similar to what we've been doing with ethane going to Bahia, as Marcelo mentioned. The utilization rate in the third quarter, there was a slight recovery, and then they dropped to 72. And it's important to highlight that in the second quarter, we had a downtime to correct some construction problems that we identified along 2016 and in early 2017, and this downtime corrected all the problems. So the cost of the downtime was taken on by the EPC group, and this led to a drop in production in 2Q, and then there was a recovering of marginal production, which made it possible to keep the margins of sales in the domestic market and a slight increase of exports from Mexico in the third quarter as compared to the second quarter. In year-to-date numbers, we can see very clearly our strategy of favoring our relationship with the domestic market as part of the philosophy of the project of creating value for the Mexican economy and creating a close relationship to assure flexibility in supply and adding our sales in a local market by 2%. And we have also reduced exports in order to deal with the drop in production because of the drop in operation rates. In terms of spreads in North America, along the same ideas as Edson mentioned, and here we are talking about polyethylene and ethane, then you can see that in the first half of the year was quite strong, with the last polyethylene plant still in a shared process in U.S. In the Q3, practically all plants that were built in the U.S. are already in normal operation, so we see the drop of the spread going on along the year, a significant drop of 20% of the spread in the combination of more polyethylene that was available, and also because all plants were fully operational, and leading thus affecting the price of ethane, going from $250 per ton to almost $450 per ton. But today it's gone back to $230, $240 per ton as the new plants were absorbed by the market. In spite of the drop along the year, if we compare the first nine months of this year and last year, we can see a reduction of spread and a growth of 6%, very much because of the polyethylene prices. And in year-to-year comparison, there is an average maintenance and a cost of raw materials. Now, if we go with EBITDA, we can see a drop in the third quarter, which is a result of a tighter spread. I mentioned a drop of 20% of the reference spread, and here there is a drop of 12% with the EBITDA. And because we had favorable local sales, and if we compare year to year, there's a slight increase of 4% for our operation in Mexico, which is about $470 million, which is very, very good profitability, 50% EBITDA margin over revenue. So our Mexico project, as summarizing, is the largest industrial private investment ever in Mexico, with more than $5.2 billion invested. We have created 26,000 jobs during the construction and 3,000 new jobs created in Mexico after our startup. One of the main drivers for the Mexican government in the past to accept the projects was a replacement of imports, which has been going on, and with an impact in the trade balance with $1.5 to $2 billion a year. This project was, everything was built with great concern in terms of sustainability, in terms of being ecological, eco-friendly, preservation of the local flora. So we created even a small museum and a community. And because it is a project in a community that needed to evolve in terms of the Human Development Index, so we also invested in our relationship with communities, trying to provide benefits to them and at the same time having the benefit of using them as labor. It is an integrated gas plant project, a global scale, the largest polyethylene manufacturer in Mexico. It's a joint venture. So there's a DESA involved, which is a player that has more than 50 years operating in the Mexican petrochemical industry. They are very good, and it has been added great value in terms of good governance and good interaction with the local market. The ethylene supply agreement is a long-term agreement for the supply. It's international. There's more than 30 parties. By contract, it assures the delivery of volume for 100% of the unit's production capacity. And as I said, unfortunately, there were operational challenges and difficulties in terms of importing ethane to meet the clauses of the contract, although this is not what we expected. The contract stipulates quite strong clauses, the take or pay for Braskem, in case Braskem does not meet the volume that has been agreed. And this clause has been accounted for and paid for Pemex because they are not delivering the volumes that were contracted. Another important highlight is that the project was done according to project finance with $3.2 billion with a consortium of 17 banks, including many multilateral funding agencies such as IFC, IDB, EDC, BNDES, and Bancomext. Now I'm going to turn it to Pedro, who's going to talk about the consolidated results for Braskem.
Good afternoon. So in the third quarter, we had good results in terms of EBITDA, 909 million US dollars, 4% up from second quarter, 5% of increase when compared to the same quarter of last year. Year to date, we saw a drop of 12% in EBITDA. It was an expected drop, as you will remember, in the first half of last year, especially in the first 2 months of last year, we had spreads which were exceptionally good for benzene and butadiene. We had an atypical market situation which led to very high spreads, which did not happen this year. So most of that drop comes from that fact. The second effect was that last year we sold our chemicals distribution unit, and this year we did not sell it again. If you also, that capital gain does not show in our numbers this year, of course. So when we compare the evolution quarter on quarter, we can identify an effect which was mentioned before by Edson and Marcelo. The effect coming from a lower production in the first half of the year because of operating problems, which affected the whole half of the year, something which did not happen in the third quarter of this year. As for CapEx investments, below the estimated amount for the year, the main operating expense was the scheduled shutdown for the cracker in Rio Grande do Sul. And in terms of strategic investment, we have the U.S. project, which was mentioned by Fernando before. And the expectations for the year, we won't meet the CapEx numbers. For the last quarter is usually the stronger in terms of investments, so we will get close to the forecast of the year, but not really meet that forecast. As for cash generation, we had a very strong cash generation this year. The year-to-date number is quite strong, but when we compare to the first 9 years of last year, we can see that the cash generation more than doubled. When compared to last year, I've already mentioned the EBITDA, the variation in EBITDA, which is not favorable to the company, but the working capital for the company last year especially when you talk about feedstock suppliers, that led to a reduction in cash generation. We had more cash allocated to the working capital, and this year the situation is different. We have a positive effect coming from the working capital. All the other numbers are in line with our historical levels and with our expectations, leading to, as I said, an exceptionally strong cash generation. As for indebtedness, we have a long debt. Today, we have a debt coverage of about 30 months, so our cash today is more than enough to cover for the next 2 years. On top of that cash, we also have access to a credit line and standby, if you will, of another billion US dollars. And we have been working around refinancing and extending that terms. And we're also looking at the cost of that debt. So we are comparing cost and term, and because of that, we worked around our perpetual bond, and we redeemed around 700 million dollars in September, which led to a reduction in the cost of debt. We have maintained a strong cash position at $1.5 billion. And lastly, as for the debt leverage, it's under control. We can see a slight drop from 1.9 times that net over EBITDA down to 1.8, despite the drop in EBITDA, as we saw, which happened in the year-to-date, last 12 months basis, as I mentioned, that has been dropping at a faster pace than that of the gas generation pace. And then we see a drop in the leverage level. As for rating, we have maintained the same rating according to Fitch and S&P. Last week, Fitch reaffirmed Braskem's rating. I'll give the floor now back to Fernando, who will be talking about governance and compliance. As I mentioned before, this is a priority topic for Braskem. We have invested heavily both in everyday operations and in the interface with the board. And here we have a chart that shows the evolution of a series of elements, a series of components of our governance and compliance project. Points which, in our view, help improve our governance, help improve our ability to manage compliance, starting with the number of independent board members. Before, we had 2 independent members in the board. Today, we have 8, including the chairman of the board. The chairman of the board is an independent member. We created a compliance committee, which was contemplated in the bylaws and which reports directly to the board. We also have a chief compliance officer responsible for the compliance area, of course, and who also reports directly to that compliance committee I just mentioned. So there's a very strong link in terms of reporting, a direct report with the board. The compliance department, which before reporting to the legal department, today it is totally independent. We have invested also in a series of processes and activities relative to compliance, which led to a need to increase the team. We moved from 8 members in Brazil to a team of 35 around the world. Most of the team is located in Brazil, but we have compliance structures in the U.S., Mexico, and in Europe to address compliance activities. We also have an ethics channel, which was managed internally before. Now it is outsourced. It's managed by a specialized company that entailed a series of improvements in terms of capturing claims and complaints. And that will ensure that anonymity is maintained throughout the process. And also have put together an internal audit department with a functional report to the CCO, but also to the compliance committee. And a series of studies have been conducted, which have helped us identify a series of possible improvements, which are now being implemented. In terms of processes and policies, we also see a very strong development. In the past, we used to have a code of conduct which governed and listed and instructed members how to behave, how to work. And the process we've been going through for the past few years led to an important investment in terms of spelling out all those policies and in actually reviewing the code of conduct. Now we have a code of conduct for third parties, outsourced contractors, a series of guidelines, series of policies. Policies have to be approved by the board, and a guideline has to be approved by the company's management. So we have a very high level of oversight now, not only of where, but of how to implement those guidelines and policies. They are being surveyed, implemented, and executed through a very robust effort of communication across the world, so all units are able to incorporate those policies with e-learning trainings, on-site trainings across all levels of the company, from the board down to the operating team. And also a significant improvement in our interface with third-party contractors in terms of third-party risk management, contracts which now include anti-corruption provisions. So all those efforts have been put in place as we seek better governance for the company, as we seek more transparency in our relationships with all our stakeholders, suppliers, community, investors, but mainly as we seek to ensure ethical behavior across the company. A very, as I said, significant investment, but which has helped the company improve its processes, has helped us understand our challenges around the world. Another important point I'd like to highlight, I'd now give the floor back over to Edson. He's leading this topic within Braskem to share with you. It's our initiatives around circular economy. Braskem is one of the largest plastic producers in the world, and you have been seeing in headlines across the world how plastic has been a constant presence in the media because of pollution and waste. And Braskem has decided to make its positioning more explicit in terms of plastic waste, in terms of circular economy. We've been working around that, and I'd like to ask Edison to touch on that subject. Please, Edison, you have the floor.
I would like to start remembering everyone what we call the belief and the purpose of Braskem. So the belief that plastic is very good and helps people having a better life, and that we believe that plastic and chemistry make life better, and the purpose is to improve people's lives by creating sustainable chemistry and plastic solutions. So when we talk about circular economy, so we have the typical linear chain. We produce, use, and dispose in a chain where we produce, use, and reuse. So we want to use products in some way, either through recycling or reusing or using it for energy production. There are many different alternatives. I think that undoubtedly, yeah, absolutely sure of the benefits that plastic has provided to society. And today, plastic is a fundamental solution for us to improve and increase the availability of food, to avoid loss in the production of food. So the world wastes one-third of the food it produces. Without plastic, this number would be even greater. With plastic, we are able to reduce that number. Just as an illustration of this one-third of food that is produced and wasted, it accounts for 7% of the greenhouse effect gases that are annually produced in the world. So in terms of plastic play a key role in the food chain, also in availability of water and sanitation. water is always present, also in terms of hygiene, hospital security or safety. So I could go on and on for a long time. The plastic is very successful in its use. It has a growing use. There is a problem that is becoming clearer and clearer, that we need to think about what happens after consumption, what we need to do with residues so that we can responsibly deal with the management of waste and to avoid that plastic is disposed in an appropriate way in the environment. So we have three main objectives. Number one is to communicate what we have already been doing for a while. I think Braskem, ever since its creation, has been supporting cooperatives of garbage collection, recyclable collection, so we support the scrappers, as I said, and we want to work more and more with renewable sources. We made official the creation of another department focusing on the development of mechanical recycling solutions. So the main objective is to communicate what we do. Number two, we need to make explicit our intention of accelerating what we are already doing. I'll try to share with you what we've been doing. And last, the third objective is to make an invitation to our customers and the customers of our customers and brand owners for research organizations, academia, and society as a whole to join Braskem and other petrochemical companies in this effort, because I think that this is a solution that will demand the effort of many different stakeholders in society so that we can reach our objective. So in a nutshell, we have listed 8 global initiatives that Braskem is already involved in, but we will be doing more intensely from now on. Number one, we want to have partnerships with clients to develop products which can favor recycling and reuse of plastic packaging. And we want to do it with our clients and with other partners. So the petrochemical industry has been working for a long time in order to have more efficient packaging solutions. So in terms of cheese, plastics, thickness of film, what we have today compared to what we used to have 6, 8, or 10 years, well, it's completely different in terms of mechanical properties for the same packaging. We have a much smaller use of material. Sometimes the reduction is 10, 20, almost as much as 40% reduction in the weight of packaging. We want to continue investing in new renewable origin resins. We want to develop and support new technologies and types of recycling. So as part of the WeCycle program, there's a significant number of initiatives that we have worked on to close the cycle of certain products. And it's joint work with our customers, with recyclers, with the companies that collect the waste, the recyclable waste. So the idea is to reinforce the work, also bringing our technology development capacity. So there's a team focusing on finding alternatives and new technologies to improve mechanical recycling, to enable chemical recycling when I transform a waste in raw material to make new chemical products or new resins, to find ways, for example, to improve the washing of waste, to remove odor during recycling, and so on and so forth. Education programs Braskem has had a project with Educatur for a while, so it goes through the effort of changing and improving our behavior as consumers. So assessment of the plastic life cycle. And we have been doing it. There are many initiatives, and we want to compare different materials. We want to see which are the most appropriate, not just in terms of waste generation, but also in terms of energy consumption, water consumption, O2 generation, looking at the whole life cycle of products to support the measurement of communication of recycling and recovery indicators for plastic packaging materials. This is important, and we may advance in measuring and so that we may effectively see how effective the actions that we are taking are. And the last two points, points 7 and 8, are more related to the issue of solving the liability. 1 to 6 are related to us really changing a linear economy and making it into a circular economy to provide solutions in terms of the destination of waste. And 7 and 8 are more related to our liabilities, especially the issue of waste in the sea or in the oceans. So we want to have partnerships aimed to understand, prevent, and solve the debris problem in the ocean. So we have already published a document which is in our website. I want to talk about the scenario and how we are seeing the evolution of our business over the next few months or next year. I'm going to share with you a vision of our industry. And so the indicators that are most widely used in the petrochemical industry, so our scenario is slightly better than this because of our spread. But this is the scenario that is consensus in the industry. So you can see for 2019, a slight reduction in the spread for chemicals. And this is related to supply and demand and new production capacity that will start, some in U.S. and some in Asia. Polyethylene, as Edson mentioned, so new volumes that will be part of our production capacity in the U.S. So IHF will affect a little bit of the spread, especially in the first half of next year. And so we are expecting an impact next year. In terms of polypropylene, in the different regions, especially in Europe, in the U.S., it's quite positive, and in vinyls, a stability as compared to this year. All these numbers, all these markets are suffering the impact of the dynamics of the dispute, the commercial dispute between the U.S. and China. So what we see that is going on today, there is a market expectation that this will go on for a few months. It's a rearrangement of global production chains. So people who used to buy from China and the U.S. today, they are seeking new markets. And so demand is still there, offer is still there, or supply is still there. But we'll still be seeing the impact of this rearrangement in the near future. I would like to make a comment about that, which is the difference in this rearrangement of chemicals and resins and finished products. In the short term, resin flow will change. It can rearrange itself quite easily. So instead of going from US to China, it will come from Europe, Asia, Americas, and go into China, and then the American products will go to different regions. We are already dealing with this impact in our everyday business, and there is a second impact, which tariffs are also impacting finished products and the transmission of production into a product that is sold in the U.S. and manufactured in China, such hair dryers, toys, and so on and so forth. The movement of the production location is not as fast as moving the destination of a flow that is very easy to do in our industry. It's very tradable. The second effect, we're still trying to understand, so the industry and the many countries, and we will see this unfolding over the next 1 or 2 years as companies start to reorganize their production chains. And this may be very positive for our presence in the U.S., for example, if more products will start to be manufactured in the U.S., especially in durable goods that will be made in the U.S., demand will grow for us. But this impact will require some more time for the industry to understand and for the many companies to understand what will happen. In some cases, we will benefit from that, and it might create some challenges in other regions. Well, in any way, the Braskem strategy, or the strategy that we have had for many years, for more than 10 years, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of going international and having geographical diversification, creates a scenario that makes it possible for us to navigate well in this environment. So, for example, if the Chinese market has some sort of limitation in terms of whatever is produced in the U.S., we can send what is produced in Brazil and Mexico. So within the arrangement of the global flows, we can allocate or reallocate our production. And this is very helps us a lot to reduce impact, because we can adapt our commerce flows and adapt it to the new reality. Still about supply and demand cycles. I mentioned the issue about chemicals and polyethylene, polypropylene. We have seen a growth of the U.S. In its local demand, a growth in economy, which is good. And in vinyls, so not so much investment here, but we think it will continue positive. Another element affecting the four segments that you can see here is Brazilian demand. So the expectation of recovery, that the Brazilian economy will continue its recovery. So we are hoping or expecting 3 or 4% growth in Brazil. And we think that we will have a positive growth rate here in Brazil, which is also positive for Braskem's performance. Now, Braskem will talk about our priorities in the future.
In closing, I'll be touching upon our priorities on the final slide, a broad overview of our strategy. We have four main priorities which summarize what we're doing in terms of operations and strategy, starting with productivity and competitiveness. We're talking about a global industry increasingly integrated with trade flows, as we just heard, in terms of the tariff dispute between the U.S. and China. All of that impacts our local industry. Also a very volatile industry in terms of feedstock prices. And so, for us to maintain our success path, we need to continue to invest in terms of increasing productivity and competitiveness. And we are doing that across all our businesses, processes, product development, financial operations management, commercial operations management. So it is a continuous search for higher productivity and higher competitiveness so that we continue to remain as a global player in this market. Our ambition under the same topic is to be a first quartile operator. In other words, that Braskem, in all its operations, we want to remain, as I said, one of the main players in the world, and that, of course, entails a continuous effort in terms of benchmarking, comparing what we do, once again, trying to find the right level of investment to maintain Braskem at the top of the productivity and competitiveness ladder. Number two, given the impact of number two in our capacity to produce, in our capacity to be or to remain competitive in terms of cost, we have also worked around diversifying feedstock. As it was mentioned before, we have a series of initiatives which we'll continue to explore around feedstock. We have been making investment decisions in the past, which have led our feedstock base to be very diversified. We have reached a balance between liquid base and gas base, as we also create a flexibility of around 20%. What do I mean? We want to be able to run 40-60 naphtha gas or 60-40, either through physical investments or through an improved capacity in terms of managing our industrial plants. In other words, optimizing our operations on an everyday basis or having contracts with our suppliers which are more flexible, which allow us to create this fluctuation, if you will, as market conditions evolve. The third pillar, geographic diversification. We started that in Mexico in their first acquisition in the U.S., a second acquisition in the U.S. after that, and then Europe. And now we are building a new PP plant in the U.S. So we continue to try and diversify commercially, geographically, and we also want to reinforce our presence in Asia, our first steps only, but we have been added personnel in that market to be able to better access that market. And again, it is a continuous search for projects that will enhance our diversification, both in terms of production basis and in terms of commercial capacity across the globe. We want to be competitive. We want to be able to send our products around the world, including an increasing number of geographies. This will, of course, benefit our businesses greatly. And lastly, we need also to always have an eye on reputation and governance to strengthen the company's image. We have been seeking the recognition. Our main ambition is to be recognized by the industry, by our partners, by our investors, and recognized as a company which has a positive impact both locally and globally, because we have innovative, ethical, and sustainable way of managing, of doing things. As it was mentioned, the circular economy project is a very important pillar of that. That all of that combined will lead us to be in the first quartile as a petrochemical operator. We also plan to expand our capacity considerably in the next few years to allow us to have an EBITDA of operations outside Brazil to contribute with more than 50%. Which will allow us to be seen as a truly international company. So that's a summary of our strategy and our numbers for the third quarter. I think we can wrap it up here, and we can start the Q&A session. All right, thank you, very good. We will now take some questions, but I'd like to ask you to ask the questions using the mic. State your name, your company, and please speak close to the mic. There are people following remotely, and they need to listen to you loud and clear. So let's start the questions and comments. Thank you. Now you have the floor. Use the mic. Thank you. Thank you, Pedro. Thank you, Edson, Fernando, for your presentation. My first question is for contract. The contract with Petrobras matures at the end of 2020. I'd like to know if there is anything new on that front. And a second question has to do with COMEX in Mexico. We heard that there could be some renegotiation. Is this going to happen, or is there any intention of searching for an independent distributor? So what kind of dynamic can we expect? And also a question about the flexibilization of the crackers. Today we have a growing demand for ethane and a decreasing demand for naphtha. How do you see that playing out going forward? How do you see the market working around naphtha and ethane going forward? So I'll start, and then Marcelo might complement if he wishes to do so. In terms of the NAFTA contract with Petrobras, as you said, it will mature by the end of 2020, the NAFTA contract with Petrobras. We are midway through it now. It's a five-year contract. The negotiations for the renewal of that contract is something that, in our view, will happen next year. We won't wait until the very last minute to do that. Today, though, it is not a priority for us now. I think we can wait for next year to address that issue. That's when we'll start the negotiations with Petrobras next year. As for the Mexico question, Pemex has been facing operating challenges. As I mentioned, we have a contract which is quite well structured. And as it was said, this has helped the company maintain its normal flow. We have been having a very good open dialogue with them in terms of what they need to do to improve their operating rates across the whole system. They have the production system, the extraction, the exploration system, the transportation system. So it's a combination of systems that need investment. The good news is that they realized that in the short term, that would not be possible. So they started to import feedstock from the U.S., and they're trying to work around more structural solutions, both regarding their assets and also regarding the importation of ethane. As for renegotiation, as I said, we have a very strong contract. We know about the contract, the obligations. The ballast for the contract finance was the main element that drove the investment decision. Our intention is to collaborate with Pemex. We want to operate the plant at full steam. So we continue to talk with them in trying to find the best ways to do that. So they need to find a solution in terms of importation or imports, which will be more structured, that will create an opportunity for us to do the import. We could import and produce resins if they have some kind of problem or issue. It could be an opportunity to operate at a higher level for those plants. After some time, we can exceed the number of production, but we won't knock on their door to renegotiate. The contract is ongoing, is valid. There will be a new president in the country And we have heard from the new administrations that they're looking into all contracts, not only ours, but all contracts that were signed for the past few years. So our focus will be to look for the best economic rationale, just as it happens with all long-term contracts. There will be times where it will favor us, other times it will favor Pemex. When ethane reaches the level of 450, it was good for them. So the challenge lies rather on their operating capacity than on the contract economic rationale. So we need to wait for the new administration to take office, and then we'll be talking to them following that rationale, that we have a very strong economic contact with them. As for NAFTA and ethane in the plant of Camaçari, the logic behind the investment is to create flexibility. As Marcelo mentioned, 13% of the ethane was produced because the rationale that we have become more competitive because of that. As time goes by, that might change in this particular industry. The concept, as I said, is to create a better balance across everything we do, including NAFTA and other feedstock, and flexibility. So the Camaçari project falls under the flexibility umbrella. We can run the company for 3, 4, or 5% with zero ethane. System was put together, was built to be flexible. That's the rationale behind the project, flexibility. And the mid to long run view is to reach a balance for the whole system. Half NAFTA, half the give or take gas or other feedstock, always following along that flexibility concept. We won't stop processing NAFTA, right? Yeah. We do not see NAFTA as the only possible feedstock to produce those products. NAFTA will remain as a competitive feedstock, as it has been for some time.
Just complementing, as Edson mentioned, NAFTA is quite free in the market, and ethane is a raw material that started navigating in 2018. So the markets of NAFTA and ethane are liquid. So we want to have competitiveness. That's what we seek. Good afternoon, everyone. I am from Banco Santander. So going back to Mexico, and talking about the contract, you said that Braskem is seeking alternatives. And so what would be the additional investment to increase capacity? We have seen a drop in Q3. How is the fourth quarter going? Like to ask a question regarding Brazil. There is a new government, a new president elect. How can that affect structurally your business, looking in the long term, in terms of imports and the flow of goods to Brazil, thinking of China? And then last, after the growth of the U.S., that is going on, which would be the potential sources for you to seek organic or inorganic growth? As I said, Pemex is already importing ethane. and to trying to change that into something more structural. They have adapted a few systems to create the capacity to import. As they advance the investment, there may be an opportunity to use more of that structure that would be potentially built even by third parties. And then we might operate without making any investments. So we are looking at the alternatives. We have the know-how of how to do it, how to deal with ethane from what we learned in Bahia. We already have the logistic know-how of how to do that. So we are following up what Pemex is doing and assessing the alternatives. Our preference is that a system be built by third parties that could facilitate it. Today there is an existing structure for the export of ethane in the U.S. by companies. And ideally, the same thing should happen in Mexico. With a new government in a previous reform, there was a natural evolution. With a new government, we need to see whether Pemex is going to build that structure, if they're going to have a third party building it, and then depending on what happens, we will assess whether there is any possibility for us to make any sort of investment there. But our priority is to discuss with Pemex the contract and the delivery that they are mandated to make according to contract clauses. So we are going to go to them and say, well, you have an obligation, what are you doing to deliver what has been contracted, the supply of raw materials. In the fourth quarter, it's slightly better, but we still have a lot of volatility. Sometimes they deliver 100% of the contracted amount, sometimes it's 70%. On average, it's slightly better than it used to be, but it's something that we still need to follow up on an everyday basis. I'm going to skip your question about tariffs. Afterwards, we can go back to that, and I'll talk about potential projects for the propane blend in the U.S. The teams of the many different businesses in the many different regions have been developing many opportunities and ideas. Today, we have a quite interesting portfolio of investment with relevant impact in productivity, with a slight increase in capacity. The lines are getting slightly more productive. We have projects to reduce bottleneck, except for the U.S., where the priority with a new plant, we don't need to reduce bottleneck anymore. And we have a few projects in new plants, either in partnership with some other company or our own projects. There's nothing that we would communicate externally. But we have a project pipeline, and we are working. And as they evolve, we discuss with the board in order to come to a decision. And whenever we reach a decision, we will report that to the market. The issue of tariff is quite complex because the logic is the logic of an ecosystem. So as I was talking about China and the U.S., the U.S. has taken a position of raising their tariffs, and the new government here in Brazil is lowering tariffs. But it is important to understand that everything has consequences that we need to understand so that the ecosystem may work. In the past, there were situations in the past, and not just Brazil, other countries too, when lowering tariffs was a good idea because this provides more income available to consumers as prices go down without understanding. It's not quite like that things work. And if there is not a transition process where other costs associated to the operation of the country also get more competitive and therefore permit tariffs to be more adequate. And lastly, in our case, it's important to remember that although resin tariffs is 14%, in practice, in real life, it's much smaller and much closer to the tariffs that we see around the world, which is around 6.5% because of the set of agreements that Brazil has that end up impacting our industry slightly different from other regions. So the appearance that there is a big discrepancy in practice in Mercosur, in Argentina, many products from Colombia that end up causing an impact on the market significantly and other countries to send lots of products to Brazil. And it creates a challenge. So I think that there is a logic for the tariff. It's a tool that is used by all countries. And in the case of the U.S. and China, they are raising their tariffs. So let's see what the government will do so that we can understand. So it's a change of the ecosystem as a whole. It may have a positive impact. Just to qualify the issue of the ecosystem, I think that it's no secret that the Brazil's tax burden is one of the most complicated in the world. Of our tax contingencies in the balance sheet, almost all of them are in Brazil. In Mexico, there's none, neither in the U.S. or Europe. The number of people that we have here to deal with tax affairs is completely different from what we have abroad. I was talking to Marcelo about gas in Brazil. There's something that is not, there is no incentive to efficiency in the industry. Brazil has some structural issues in other areas that affect the competitiveness of Brazilian industry. And as Fernando said, we need to look at the system as a whole. And adding, in terms of cost, number one, the chemical industry in Brazil is very important. Every developed country has a strong industry. On the other hand, the regulation model that we have in Brazil imposes cost to the industry, but also logistic issues. Today, it's very difficult to invest in infrastructure in ports in Brazil. And so we need to have competitive energy, gas, and ports, so that we may effectively compete in the global market with import tariffs that are comparable to other countries in the world. I think this is important. And we need to keep alert to what will happen from now on. There are many situations today in which customers have alternatives. Many customers export. We have in Manaus the duty-free zone that has products directing production to the Brazilian market. And as Pedro said, we need to look at the system as a whole, because just as there is free negotiation and then there are some states that offer benefits in local states, products for imported products, and it mitigates slightly this difference. So there are many variables that should be considered and addressed, thinking of the whole. As a reminder, you can send your questions through the web. In the meantime, we're going to answer some other questions. Good afternoon. I am Vinicius from HSBC. Which synergies do you see for a possible integration? I am going to answer your question just in theoretical approach because a possible transaction is being conducted by our controlling shareholder and the participation in the company's management is just in terms of supporting the due diligence in terms of obtaining information. So I will see what I would do if I were buying Basel. I think that there are some significant opportunities of synergy that go along the lines of continuing some actions that Braskem has taken and they have created value. As we acquired polypropylene plants in the US and Europe and integrated them in our management model, we could start some actions that were important. And Brazil is structurally an importer of polypropylene, and then Europe imports polypropylene. We manufacture a range of products that is wide in Europe because when we bought the plant, the previous owner was operating in a number of segments and needed a product. As we learned to manage the system, we started getting some of the products that are sold in Europe and that were no longer manufactured in Europe and are exclusively manufactured in Brazil. They are products with a slightly higher value added than some of the things we used to see in Brazil. So it improves exports from Brazil. It goes to a market that we are already serving in Europe and frees up space in the plants in Europe for us to manufacture products that are more competitive for that specific asset. So as we manage the network as a whole, we create this type of opportunity in optimizing assets, in optimizing flows, as there are many flows of resin going to different regions. There are many different uses in managing the network as a whole and in making use of its synergy. So here there is synergy. So part of the synergy is here. Obviously, in a transaction such as this, there is a simplification of overhead, which would make the greater complexity of the combination. It's not just take all administration from one or another, but we don't need the sum of both because there are many synergies. There are some opportunities in the logistic management and raw material management, so you move more things, there will be synergies. The use of ships, of train cars, so the logistics system in Europe. So there are many different operational synergies. Lastly, there would be a long list for me to go through. There is a set of synergies which is a combination of the capacities of the two companies that although we look at the list of players of the chemical and petrochemical market, maybe Lyondell is the most similar to Braskem in terms of product portfolio and also in terms of geographical presence. At the same time, there is a lot of complementation. They are not in South America. We are in Mexico. They are in Mexico in the U.S. So it's a relatively manufacturing operation in Europe. That's us. They have a bigger manufacturing in Europe. so we will complement each other. Can we have another, a new PP plant in Europe when we look at the system as a whole? So today, for Braskem to build a new PP plant in Europe might not be the best opportunity, but as a whole, it might start making sense. So Braskem did not build a PDH to have access to propene. So with the combined, the new combined company should be built a new plant in Europe and the U.S. to improve supply, maybe if we're combining the two together. There are many possible strategic options, and in our industry, scale makes a difference, so the combination could provide access to new opportunities. And this is a simplified list only. It's just from the top of my head, thinking of what I would do if I were there and I were buying Lion WSL.
Good afternoon. My name is Rogério. I'm an investor. So the question is about the new terms for the New York Stock Exchange. Sorry, but the sound from the questions, Mike, is impossible to understand. Let's go to the answer then. So the first thing to mention is that Braskem has already published the necessary documents early in the year. And what we're doing now is working around our internal controls. We had a term which was extended this week, a deadline. We did not conclude all the ongoing work, so we asked for an extension. What I can tell is that the team has been working hard and focused to finish that as soon as possible. The scope changes with time. So as new headlines emerge or new facts emerge, we need to check and see if it's all according to plan. So it's a bit of a moving dynamics, if you will. With what we have today, that additional deadline is in line with our expectations. But, of course, there's always a certain level of uncertainty because of this moving quality of the process. But in terms of resolved numbers, we're not concerned about that. It is rather a work around internal controls, as I said, and meeting the deadline. Thank you. We'll now start the Q&A. If you have a question, please press star 1. Mr. Rafael Arno from UBS has a question. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking my question. I have two questions. The first one about the deal with Lyondell again. What are the main hurdles for that deal? Is Mexico involved? Is Petrobras involved? What are the main hurdles for closing that deal? The second question has to do with the EBITDA generation outside of Brazil. Your guidance is to generate around 50% of EBITDA abroad. So my question is, how do you plan on reaching that number and when? Thank you. I'll start with the second question first. It's not a guidance. It's rather an ambition, a wish that we have. And there is no defined deadline for that. We want to work towards generating EBITDA abroad at a level above 50% in the mid to the long run. Just as we talk about the balance for feedstock with a flexibility range of around 20%, we're also talking rather about a mid to long term ambition than a guidance. There is no defined, specified deadline, as I said, for that. As for the deal with Lyondell Bazell, my ability to answer your question is quite limited. As I said, the role of the management has been to support the diligence process. We have not participated in any conversation between the management and Lyondell about the deal specifically. We are not active participants in drafting contracts. I wouldn't even know if they're already talking about writing contracts. In my view, what I can tell you is that we are close to the end of the deal. We have already answered a significant amount of questions coming from the controlling shareholder. But as I like to say, it's only final when the contract is signed. And our expectations now are that as shareholders are in negotiations with possible buyers, other questions might emerge. So it is an open process. I wouldn't know if there are any hurdles, as you mentioned. Your question talked about hurdles. It is a very complex deal, which involves two different geographies which are unknown to Lyondell, namely Brazil and Mexico, with all the idiosyncrasies involving those geographies, both countries going through government transitions. Very complex. We're talking about a very big company such as Braskem, different countries, different geographies. So to me, we are all within the expected process for such a huge deal. Once again, given the specificities of our structures and also due to the participation of Petrobras, so I do believe that Lyondell is addressing the same thing with Petrobras. But again, I'd like to insist, this is just off the top of my head. I'm not a participant in that process. If I were the CEO of Lyondell, I'd also be talking with Petrobras. That's what I would imagine. He's an intelligent man, and he's probably doing that, talking to other stakeholders. If there are hurdles, as you mentioned, I don't know. I wouldn't know. The 20F issue might be relevant. Yes, but I wouldn't know how that would fit in this specific deal. We'd have to ask Lyondell directly, actually. Okay, I got it. Thank you.
This is Andre from Itaú. It's another question. About the trend of a closed economy. You have the green polyethylene made of ethane. Has it become more viable in terms of price? Do you think there is any more space for this product in the future? And there was a problem with supply recently. And the last question is, you are quite good at cash. So what is your cash production? The CapEx from now on is quite okay. How do you imagine that you're going to manage your cash and the payout of dividends? So it's a complex question. Three people will answer it. So beginning with the issue of renewables. I think there's a difference that is important for us to make clear. One thing is the cost of ethanol-based ethene. They are structurally different costs. Ethene, naphtha-based ethene versus ethanol-based ethene have different drivers, although we know naphtha and ethanol were already talking to each other in the fuel market. They had some relationship. What we see, ethanol ends up being less correlated to the foreign exchange rate. It's more priced in BRL than NAFTA. So from time to time, there may be variations in relative cost of production of ethanol-based ethene, and structurally speaking, on the whole, naphtha-based ethene is slightly cheaper. But there are times when, for example, when the BRL, when the BRL-USD FX rate is 4 BRLs per dollar, the cost is almost equivalent. What defines the pricing of green polyethylene is not that. So green polyethylene today is a niche product, and it competes with other renewable source resins. And if we are to compare the pricing of green polyethylene versus the other resins, it's the most competitive resin available. What we say to our customers is that if they cannot see any value, if they not capture value in using green polyethylene, or if they have an internal indicator or something internally of equating sustainability, which is important, so it doesn't make sense for them migrating from naphtha polyethylene to green polyethylene. So it is detached from cost. It's related to the value. And so the issue of raw material. What I mentioned here about the ultra-deep water oil is related to the shortage of ethane and propane domestically in Brazil. Brazil, before the ultra-deep oil, Brazil used to be very deep, poor in these raw materials. As the ultra-deep water oil came and became more available structurally, this issue is being resolved. Specifically, we have some shortages in refineries where this raw material is extracted from gas. So we should bring the raw material from the U.S., bringing raw material from the U.S. at a limited volume. So there is a logistic at a limited volume complementing these specific failures that we have because of Petrobras. But structurally speaking, as we have more oil coming from ultra-deep waters, we think that the supply will be at a good level. So, this decision combines the future prospect of investment. And so, as Fernando mentioned earlier on, and the maturity of these projects as compared to the payment of dividends by the company. What we have approved, what our board rather approved, is a clearer policy in terms of which are the parameters for us to define the volumes that the company may get at. So there's a legal limit of 25% of net profit, of net income, and according when we analyze the dividend, we are going to look prospectively into the future to see what we have in the future, and according to this projection, leverage should not exceed 2.5 times. So, we think it is natural that we pay out dividends. So, as we said, there's nothing at an advanced stage of maturity. There, we don't have any major projects. We have smaller projects that are at the point of being approved. And on the other side, we have strong cash generation. So naturally, something will happen. But this will be decided further on as we define the budget, and we know what will come in the future. Considering we are running late, we are open for another question from the audience, live audience, and another question from the web. Mr. Pedro Medeiros from Citibank would like to ask a question. Good afternoon to everyone. Congratulations on your performance. And thank you for opening for questions. I have two questions. One is slightly more strategic. I would like to hear your opinion as to the expansion of capacity and the possibilities for expanding capacity. When do you think the time will come for you to start considering investment in new polyethylene capacities, new PE capacities? And the second question is looking more the trend of performance in 2018. We discussed a long time about supply of raw materials. But in 2018, you have demonstrated a significant reduction as compared to the historic average in terms of naphtha provided by Petrobras in Brazil. Could you comment whether there is any target, any level of equilibrium, or how much you could process of imported naphtha? And the last question, looking into the two next quarters to understand, and you've addressed this in the presentation, is there any plan of scheduled downtime that is relevant in the next two quarters that we should take into account? Thank you very much.
As to the capacity expansion for PE. Okay. Among our assets in Brazil, we have at least three alternatives to expand capacity in those assets. Capacity expansion projects usually have a good level of profitability provided we have feedstock and demand. And so there is a possibility, when we have that, we have a good possibility to expand our Duque de Caxias asset, both for the cracker and for the PE plant. Unfortunately, what we had as a scenario for the past few years, starting in 2013, 14, 15, and 16, we saw a drop in market demand in Brazil, and that delayed possible decisions. But all the projects are ready. It's only a matter of having availability of feedstock. For some of the smaller projects, it would be a matter of simply redirecting projects towards our PE plants. For the Duque de Caxias plant, we have to solve a raw material issue as well. Today, we have about a third of our PE production. From one-third to 40% of our PE production is exported. So we have no problems in meeting strategic markets demands, both in Brazil and abroad, markets that we could service from Brazil, especially in Latin America. Just a brief follow-up in terms of feedstock, naphtha specifically. As Edson mentioned when he made his presentation, we've been expanding our supplier portfolio globally. And with that, some opportunities have emerged that have shown us that we can better use better negotiating conditions to import. So we saw opportunities, and we ended up importing more naphtha than buying from Petrobras. In terms of bringing naphtha to Brazil, we have a limitation because of logistics issues. We depend on Petrobras' infrastructure to bring that naphtha in, on top of what we already bring in, about 57%. But there is room for us to advance. And from a certain point on, we would need to assess costs. It would be an economic decision at the end. In terms of scheduled shutdowns, the third question, we do have a scheduled shutdown at one of our plants in Bahia. That's for next year. And then for 2020, we have a scheduled shutdown for BP, a BP plant. No, I'm sorry, 2021 as well. There was a change in the Brazilian legislation which allows us to conduct an internal study that will allow us to extend the campaigns to another 8 to 9 years. So that's something we're going to be doing throughout the next 5 years. We have already started, and we should have a potential extension of field campaigns. Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Meridiana Silva. I'm an investor. I'd like to, first of all, congratulate you on the results, on holding this type of event. I'd like to ask you to please talk a little bit about social projects that you support vis-a-vis the Tax Incentive Act. Are we using those tax benefits? Are we using that to the full extent that we can? Okay. That issue around relationships with society and communities, that's a priority for us. And it is in line with our intention of being good corporate citizens. We invest a lot of effort in social projects. We do use incentive laws, but we invest a lot more than we benefit from the law. All initiatives are geared towards needs that we identify from the standpoint of the communities located around our industrial plants, and then we focus our energy also on priority topics. For example, the cooperatives of residue scrapers that we do across Brazil. So yesterday, by the way, we had a meeting to discuss that topic, and we are now going through a moment where we will fine-tune the way we approach that. We are conducting a very detailed study of the surroundings of our plants, including socioeconomic indicators, human development indexes. We have hired survey companies to try and identify demands coming from those communities. And the idea is to work closer with those communities in a more efficient way. So to answer your question, it's a combination of incentives and investments, but it's always more on our side. We invest more than we benefit. But given the size of the company, it is a relevant amount of investment. But the impact is also quite significant. Another component we discussed yesterday, coincidentally, is to try and find a balance in terms of allocating efforts both in Brazil and in other geographies where we operate. Of course, the priority would fall in Mexico, given that Europe and U.S. are geographies where we have a higher level of development. And so instruments such as those, of course, they're used, but they're used differently in those more developed societies. So we have a set of efforts. In Brazil alone, the private social investment has impacted over 180,000 people, either directly or indirectly. People who were touched by those projects, they include the revamping of an elderly home, to reforestation, environmental education programs, revamping of public schools. So it's a series of activities that we execute. If I could add, we also sponsor Brazilian para athletes, and this sponsorship will continue throughout the current Olympic cycle. We have a partnership in the U.S. with the Philadelphia Eagles around sustainability initiatives. We are also supporting a recycling project inside the Philadelphia Eagles Stadium. Initiatives that we also have in place in Brazil in terms of recycling.
So now our questions and answers session has ended, and now we go to the next phase, is the delivery of the 20-year frequency seal that APIMEC offers to all companies that have consecutively make the effort and do their best to publish their practices, and also in order to encourage them to continue, and we hope that you get to 30 years. So I am going to turn to give you the seal. And now for the closing remarks, I would like to thank you for your presence. The partnership with APIMEC is an initiative that is very important to have this dialogue with the market, with a community of investors, so that you understand better Braskem, but also for us to understand your expectations, your questions, also direct the way we communicate with you, and we learn a lot here. So it's a day-to-day dialogue that our investor relations team has with all investors, and we try to incorporate this in our communications with you. And just in closing, in addition to thank, I would like to reinforce or to stress our strategy that is being quite successful in meeting our customer needs, in operating our plants with safety within the concept of sustainability, that have enabled the reduction of our indebtedness level, and that put Braskem today at a condition both in terms of its presence and globally and in many geographies where we operate, in a position of highlight with a portfolio and pipeline of new projects that we are working on. And over the next few years, we hope to mature in order to start in our pursuit to continuously create value to all our shareholders. So once again, thank you very much for your presence, and see you next time when we publish the results for the year of 2018 in the beginning of next year. Thank you very much.